Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
That indeed it is. And we are joined by Bob Mata, defense attorney and host of the podcast Defense Diaries. You guys have been streaming the trial every single day. I've been tuning in and out between doing things over here. And my goodness, as we're recording this, we're pretty close to the end of week two here and about to enter day eight. And it feels like we've already been doing this for like 20 some days.
Really does.
Why really is that? Does. This is like it's one we've all been kind of like anticipating for a while. Maybe that's why. And now we're like watching every inch of the damn thing. Okay, so here we are this far in. We still have the prosecution presenting their case. And it's been interesting. Cross has been interesting. The presentation from the prosecution, I think, has been really interesting. Let's just start there with the prosecution and how you think they're doing thus far getting their case across.
Yeah, I think Brennan's doing a much, much better job than Lally did in terms of just presentation alone. You know, they were incorporating the clips of Karen's inconsistent statements right from the get. He's plugging them in like it's, you know, a made for TV movie. You know, he gets
it's like
to,
Mad Libs.
Yeah, it's unusual. I've never seen it done that way, but it's certainly effective. You know, I mean, he can really play a clip. She's given him the leeway to play a clip whenever he sees fit, which is unusual. And he'll play them, I'm sure, all throughout the closing arguments when we get there again. So it's like, it's not going to be a one and done type situation, but in terms of how he's decided to set up this trial, in stark contrast to what Lally did, I think we were talking about it last time. I always refer to what Lally did as kind of a pre-buttal case where we spent the first 2.5 weeks with him just trying to get in front of the entire third party culprit theory, calling all those witnesses up, trying to address that on the front end as opposed to the back end. And Brennan has completely abandoned that, which is the right move. I mean, this is how he should have tried it the first time. It's way more effective. It's getting the jurors the information that matters in this case in terms of trying to get a conviction for the Commonwealth. So in terms of the way he's setting up the witnesses, you know, I mean, they brought him on because he knows how to try a case. There's no question about that. So in terms of everything that I've seen thus far, and even though we're ending week two, I think we're only on witness 7 or 8, maybe. There's some lengthy witnesses. Ian Whiffen took quite a bit of time. And then, of course, Jen McCabe she'll be a day and a half or 2 days, I think, when you count, you know, when she started through the full day.
Yesterday,
and then ending tomorrow with her, the end of her cross and redirect. So,
before we get to Jennifer McCabe, let's talk about Ian Whiffen and the testimony that he brought from Cellebrite and his explanation of how the data works. This was a little bit more in depth than I think we saw last time. And this time we even got a live in-person show of seeing how this in fact works. About the 227 house long to die in cold. Here's why it was actually 6-something. Here's how this works. Here's how this phone works. Obviously I know the defense of Karen Reed is still going to say, well, the other software says otherwise, but look, this software seems to dig a bit deeper than the other one and the other version, and so it can give you more accurate information. I don't understand how that is being played as that's inaccurate, rather than it's more accurate because it is it's just more in depth. It's not, it's kind of correcting the issue of time stamping things based on the browser being open. It's now giving a more accurate look. I know it's reality that some people don't want to hear, but is there still a legitimate argument saying that, oh, that's still not accurate?
Yeah, I think ultimately when I watched Whiffen the second time, I mean, they certainly tried to clear up his testimony and make it a little more palatable for jurors, because at the end of the day, that's the only thing that matters. Mm-hmm. We don't matter. The judge doesn't matter. The only people that matter with respect to the verdict in this case is the 12 people plus the alternates that are sitting in that box. So I think from that perspective, it was easier to understand. I think ultimately what's going to happen, and I thought that Alessi did what, you know, any decent defense attorney is going to do. And Alessi's a really bright guy, and he comes hyper prepared. You know, I mean, he picked apart the things that a good defense attorney will pick apart in that, in terms of the direct, you know, I mean, the things that you've got, you know, that they removed that feature right after the trial. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's kind of a weird thing timing wise for them to have done. You know, I don't know if it came as clear as you're making it out to be in terms of Magnet not being as good as Sully Bright. Cause I mean, like the thing that I keep trying to explain to people about these companies that exist that have this software that is, you know, extracts data from Apple phones in particular, that's where the real issue is, is they just, they're guessing, you know what I mean? They don't know, like they don't know the secret sauce of Apple. So to a certain extent, you know, they're having to guess because, I mean, that's why these companies exist. Like we can't pretend like Sully Bright is some offshoot of Apple and that they have all of the data that they need to have. I mean, the entire existence of those companies to try to figure out Apple's iOS.
Sure. You know, but the fact that the data was able to be dissected that far. I mean, they're not guessing at that. That's what as they dissected it deeper and deeper, they could see how it was being recorded and how one could easily conceive this being at this time, but how actually it's this time. And here's why. Here's maybe, I don't know what to call it, a glitch or an oversight of how the program worked or how it labeled time, but they showed how it worked. And I don't know why the other company still chose the other way. Maybe they just, you know, I don't know. I don't know if they're a step behind or what, but whatever it may be, they were able to dig it down that far and show a specific time. And that specific time that it shows that would be right where it would make sense that she'd be searching how long to die in cold.
Yeah, I mean, for me, kind of any of these companies, when it boils down to it, is still a question of interpretation.
Yeah.
Because they're having to guess. You know what I mean? They just don't have that data. They don't have the ins and outs of what the iOS and what makes it operate.
But so he has the data from what he's pulled down. I mean, there is data there, but it's...
Yeah, but what I'm talking about is the interpretation of it.
Okay.
You're talking like you're acting like it's in definitives that they definitively know the answer and they just don't. I mean, the fact, like, to counter your argument, I would say, well, they had it wrong at first. Mm-hmm. So what makes you argue that it's right now? You know what
because
I'm saying?
Because they upgraded their software to read it a more accurate way because they identified that, oh, yes, this could come across.
That's what
this
they're
way.
Telling you.
Well, I know that's what they're telling me, but the thing is, that would then have to put them in the camp of being part of the conspiracy.
No. Not at all. not really.
Why else would they say
if their software originally said it was there,
sure,
and they told you that this is foolproof. And then you learn that it's not
initially
the company, whether it's Cellebrite or Magnet, any of them.
But initially,
is Tony that what these are companies that exist because they're trying to dig in to Apple's iOS to get to the inner workings. And what I'm suggesting is that I don't know that they're able to capably do it. My entire point is whatever Green's going to come up and say that at the end of the day, to me, the 227 search isn't going to matter one way or another.
Yeah.
I mean, for if I was defending the case, I would have abandoned the 227 search completely. Like, it just would have been something that I wouldn't have dealt with at all. Like, but I'm of the camp. I'm not digging into this conspiracy.
I am not either. And that you're exactly right, because that's the thing. It you would have to believe all these other pieces for that piece to make sense, which I just it don't feel that it makes a lot of sense. Again, not to say that she's not innocent, not to say that she could be, there's not enough reasonable doubt to not convict her. It's just all that mountain of story is, frankly, I mean, the more that we're learning about it, the more that we're seeing the testimony, it really feels like, you know, Brennan is painting a very good picture. And I think a very relatable one for anybody who, you know, has family, has friends that have gone out, you know, at night and hung out and then, hey, let's go over to so-and-so's and have some fun. And we have it on video at the waterfall. There's no fighting. There's nothing going on. All these people are having a good time. They somehow have to suddenly turn on John O'Keefe and decide to kill a fellow cop. While everything is going on at this party, and then everyone is going to cover all of this up. That seems absurd. But especially when we hear the testimony of everyone who was there, and we're still going to hear a lot more of it from everyone who was there, but he's painting a very relatable picture, I think, to that jury. And I feel like it's landing a hell of a lot better than it did last time for people to go, this is kind of absurd.
Yeah, I mean, look, my thought on the thing, and as far as kind of the way that I've interpreted that third party culprit theory was never that this was some kind of plot. That this was like the akin to a bar fight that went bad. Now, I don't know if you've ever been in a bar. I've had clients that have not had any intention on really, really hurting something in somebody in a bar fight, and they've done it because it's a bar fight.
Yeah.
So I think it was more along the lines of that, as opposed to this was some kind of like, let's lure John O'Keefe to the house and let's beat him to death. I don't think that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, and like for me, when I heard Alan Jackson give the opening statement, and I thought he cut the legs out from under what I believe for me would be the only reasonable explanation that something may have gone in that house, which was, as I've told you before, when we learned that Higgins was hitting Karen up, you know, they had something brewing.
Yeah.
You know, whatever the case may be, from Higgins' perspective, he thought something might be happening. From Karen's perspective, it sounded like she had, you know, ended it, whatever it was. You know, and then somehow that pops up on his screen in terms of her being in the Lexus, and she plugged in her phone and she's got Apple and she's got CarPlay. I mean, I don't know about you, but like I've got an Apple phone, and you know, my data shows up on my screen, including my text messages. And frankly, I have it set so it reads them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like in a world, so when Jackson said that in the openings that they were not arguing at all that night. Now, I don't know if he's going to try to truncate that to leading up to, you know, the event in terms of when he gets dropped off, or if that includes the car ride. Because for me, the only thing that ever made that theory work or be reasonable is you've got John, who was hammered by all accounts. I think he was like, from what I've heard, it was a .286. The guy was shit-faced.
Yeah.
You know, it had been a day of day drinking. Now we've seen the text messages from earlier in the day between John and Karen. You know, he's like, I just got sober from last night.
Yeah.
You know, earlier during the day. And then he picked it up, hair of the dog style, later that day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by that time that you know, everything goes down that evening, I mean, he's bombed.
Yeah.
You know, he's completely hammered. So, you know, and I don't know if you have any Boston friends. I got some Boston buddies. When they get drunk, they like to fight. Mm-hmm. You know, so like in a world in which John saw Higgins hitting on his girl, and we already saw from the plumber guy that John's got, you know, he had a little streak of jealousy in him. Like when Karen was texting him about the plumber coming over, and John says the shit like, I hope he's hot. You know, I mean, he's got a little jealousy in him. So, you know, you could see a world in which if that popped up on the screen, he became privy to a text that had just come through in like the last 40 minutes or half hour, that he might go into that house hot. And, you know, that maybe something did break out and it wasn't some kind of plot. It was a fight and some shit went sideways. You know what I mean? It's like, like the people that try to push it into like this was some kind of evil plot by a group of people to lure him in and kill him inside is absurd. I don't ever think that's what it was.
But it's equally absurd to think that all these people are keeping this secret. That even if it was an accident, even if it was a bar fight that went too hard or house fight, you know, and all these people are in the same area. This is not like it's all over the house. This is, they're all gathered in the one area. If this were to occur, and then you have
unless
to.
Unless it went on in the basement when it was only where it was Albert and Higgins.
But in that theory, then you'd have to see that all these people are also willing to just leave their friend to die in the snow in the front yard by a flagpole. And then Jen McCabe is Googling how long to die in cold as her friend dies in
the
front yard.
Well, I mean, if you try, I mean, it
doesn't
out,
make sense. I mean, either way, like sense. Whether it was like an evil conspiracy, which I agree, I don't think that makes any sense, or it was like, shit, this got out of hand. You're asking all these people to like be okay with it. And that's a lot of people to like be okay with it for someone that they love and no one's going to say anything.
Yeah, I don't think it's absurd. I think it's unlikely that many people would be able to keep the secret. But when you got a lot to lose, it's easier to do that. You know, I mean, like you have to think of it like as a defense attorney. I'm always thinking about every single possibility. If I'm like, okay, let me put this in the world that something did go inside the house, something happened and, you know, a fight broke out. John came after Higgins. They're, you know, he's swinging on them, whatever. And, you know, they're trying to break it up and somebody cracks John over the head with something just to get him off. It strikes him. And, you know, they end up not thinking that he's going to die, but just, like in that type of situation, that's what I'm saying. In the cases that we've handled where there's been a bar fight and somebody like ends up dying as a result of the bar fight, the person that is in the fight that is the culprit, so to speak, never thinks that they're going to kill the person if they hit them or punch them, you know, and sometimes people will hit their heads, they'll fall and hit their head on top, whatever the case may be. I don't necessarily think that if it was a situation where like, all right, well, let's just drag him outside. Like he'll get up and he'll stumble away type thing. And then he's not moving for a while. And then, you know, you have to think about that. Like if you're in that situation, you've got Brian Albert, who's a career cop, who's getting close to retirement. You've got a family with a lot of connection. I mean, people have a lot to lose. Yeah. That would be the incentive to keep shit quiet. You know, now whether or not that's, and then if you can couple it by kind of feeding information to Karen, because Karen clearly doesn't remember a goddamn thing from that night. Yeah. Like if anybody, like if they're going to try to go with the concept that Karen now suddenly remembers John walking into that house, they're going to lose all credibility with it. Because I mean, the one thing that's evident is that she just doesn't know what happened after John got out of the car.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't know whether she struck him or clipped him. I mean, you hear it from her, like her responses are what a normal person would do if they were in the situation where they made the bad decision to drive highly intoxicated, some shit went down and you don't really have any recollection of what happened that night, you're going to run through every possible scenario that could have happened, including, did I clip them? Did I hit them? All the things that she's saying, for people to be acting like that those are admissions, is disingenuous to me. That's the same thing that anybody in that situation would do if you found someone that you loved laying dead on a yard in an area where you had just dropped them off the night before. So,
but here's the issue with that. I agree. I think her reactions were very visceral. They were real. But the timeline that's being painted here it's not just when he's on the ground that she's, and she's witnessed that he's there, that she's saying, I hit him, or did I hit him, or God knows everything. She's freaking out and saying every variation of it. She's saying this before they find him
so
in the
what?
Car.
Well,
but why would the, it seem in an hysterical way, if last night she's accusing him in the voicemails of going and sleeping with another woman or whatever her paranoia was that night. Why wouldn't you naturally just think, well, he's at the other woman's house or he's sleeping on someone's couch, but he's passed out. He's drunk.
Dude, like that's asking like why people call police stations and hospitals when one of their loved ones doesn't show up at five, you know, by five.
No,
in the morning.
I'm not asking that.
That's human nature.
I'm saying, why did she go to that immediately? I would think the natural reaction would be more, he really is sleeping with somebody else, or he's sleeping on someone's couch. Why would the initial reaction be, did I hit him? If, unless you have some memory, something in your mind going, well, maybe that is a possibility.
I think if there's every possible scenario that's running through your mind, that would be one of the scenarios, you know, if
but
you're being
why?
Honest.
Well, if she saw him get into the house, why would that be a scenario?
I don't know when she decided that she saw him get into the house. I mean, that's a way later statement, right?
Well, that's the part that doesn't make sense, because if she saw him get into the house, why would she think she hit him?
But that's what I'm saying. I never heard that in the first trial. Did you?
That he got into the house?
Yeah, that she watched him walk into the house. Like that.
I don't remember if that was in the first trial or not.
It wasn't, because the first time that any of us heard is when either the whatever, I can't remember if it was the Max one or the other one. There were the two that came
You're
out.
You're right. You're right. That is when it
you
came out.
You know what
out.
I'm saying? Yeah. So that came out after the fact. That's
sure.
That's what I was
But it's out
about.
There. So yeah.
If the defense is going to try to push that narrative.
Yeah.
Like they've lost the lead there, because that's not going to hold water. She's just saying too many. No one's going to think that she definitively saw anything, because she doesn't remember shit.
But she says, in her own words, she says she definitively says it now. I mean, I know it wasn't the first one. It was in the doc. It's there. And that does not line up with, why would you think you hit him if you saw him go into the house?
See, I mean, the one thing that we don't know yet is whether or not these clips are taken out of context in these documentaries. You know, I mean,
they've been,
Allie and I have been on, you know, a Dateline.
Yeah. But they
do creative editing. Dude.
They've been showing the unedited three camera shots. Like what we saw her talking about her 7 minute explanation of how many drinks she had. That wasn't even in the doc. There was like a clip of it in the doc, but that was the full unedited everything, front, back, and a good amount on each end. So we do, I think, have a pretty good context on those clips. And that was in the ID doc. And those ones we've been seeing in full. The Dateline piece, I think we literally just saw the promo, which yes, that could be more cut up. But that one was just a three camera shot of, it's just raw. That is the raw footage.
Yeah, no. And that's for certain.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about a lot of different clips from a lot of different things. I mean,
sure.
the drinking one was, it is what it is.
Yeah. But it,
whatever,
it's from
reason,
the same
she
source.
Went into a, you know, a very long explanation of
sure.
what she drank and how much she drank.
And I'm,
but I'm,
I'm
talking about when you're getting little sound bites.
Yeah.
Plucking out.
And I'm wondering, because we've not heard that yet. We've not heard that whole piece in its entirety. All I'm saying is that the ID people gave them everything, from what I can tell, or at least a good chunk of everything, because we're just seeing raw cutting room floor footage. So I'm going to think, again, we haven't seen it yet, but if that's how they've been presenting it, I'm going to think that we're going to see that thing in its entirety too. If we don't, we don't, and I'm wrong. But it seems anything from the ID doc has been showing with a lot of context. So I would expect that going forward in it. I could be wrong though.
Yeah. I mean, we won't know until we know.
Yeah.
And that'll be during the defense's case in chief. Yeah. I mean, like when you've got the situation where Alan Jackson is saying, look, you know, the mortally wounded thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we hear his argument after the fact that she wasn't talking about when she found, or the night before, that's she was talking about when they found him.
No, she wasn't.
Like, Well, but I think she might. How do you know? Like that, well, not from that clip that they showed.
From the clip that they showed, that's like literally the next question. Now, could there be editing? Yes. I'm not going to say that that's not a possibility there. But no, the way that clip plays out is the next question is, so you're talking about that night that you saw him. Like, yeah. I'm paraphrasing, but that was literally the next sentence in that clip.
Yeah, we'll have to see the unadulterated, unedited
I agree on that, without a doubt. Yeah. But the way we saw it, that's how it played out. And now, if it actually did play out that way in the interview, I don't know.
I mean, like, but I have to assume that Alan Jackson knows.
If Dateline gave over all their footage, I don't know that Dateline has.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah.
Or Max. And I don't know who did.
Well,
who
Max did ID is the one that we were seeing bigger clips of.
Is that the Max? Is that the Max?
Yes, that's
one?
The Max ID. The bad one, the one where she's saying all sorts of shit.
Yeah.
That's the one where we're seeing more of the clip of.
I mean, I think those things will shake themselves out during the defense's case in chief.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I think the last time we talked and some of my other lawyer buddies disagree, I think they're in a position now where Karen Reed is going to have to get on the stand and testify. I don't see any way around it.
Yeah.
I know that no defense attorney ever wants to put their client on, if you can avoid it, because typically all you can get is bad out of that. The ratio of bad to good in terms of what you're going to get from putting your client on is always skewed highly in favor of the bad, because it's so easy for the jury to misinterpret something, to take a dislike to the person when they're on there, whatever the case may be. And as human beings, you know, those kind of things add up when you're sitting in a room deliberating about somebody's, life and or freedom. And, they shouldn't factor in, but the reality is they do.
And we haven't heard all the, all the Proctor stuff yet, which will certainly, I'm sure stain the eyes of the jury of the.
We haven't gotten into. I mean, this was like, let's not pretend like this is a shit investigation. I mean, that's completely. All coming.
Yeah. Yep.
Like there's no avoiding that for them, Brennan's smart enough to front load some of his most powerful material, and like a perfect example of what he did in terms of putting Jen McCabe right after Ian Whiffen, so that you've got the 227 Google searches bullshit. And now I'm going to give you Jen McCabe. Mm-hmm. So it's fresh in your memory. You just heard the guy from the company that, makes the software that they use telling you it's bullshit. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to hear her. And I'm assuming that's going to be the last thing that Jackson's going to question her about.
Yeah.
Like, strategically, I have a lot of conversations with Allison, who's my law partner. Yeah. And I'm like, man, I would just skip it. Yeah. Like you don't need it in this case. I mean, to establish reasonable doubt, you stick with the facts that matter. And that's John O'Keefe's body in the vehicle. And then the only thing that you have to try to deal with from the defense side of it is the taillight showing up. And frankly, I think it's a bigger problem for the Commonwealth to explain how that taillight ended up all over that front yard in terms of being spread out. None of it's found in the initial searches when the snow is not deep at all. It's like those are problems for the Commonwealth that if it's done with care by the defense, that they could put that onus on them, because that's where you kind of paint Proctor as the villain that had his fingers in every part of this investigation. And that becomes the only thing in terms of a conspiracy, if you want to call it a one-person cop corrupt, frame job, then, it's a much smaller hill to climb for the defense than the whole thing, wrapping it all up, the relationships between the people in the house and the cops and all that shit. That's just...
Yeah,
it's a tough sell, man.
It's a very tough sell. How do you think McCabe is doing thus far in her questioning and cross? I know I've looked at opinions on both sides of this, and it's either she's horrible or she's knocking it out of the park.
I don't look at it from a person who has watched the first trial and reached some kind of conclusion based on the state's case and the evidence that they have. you know, because like I've formed an opinion on
that. I'm saying like, how is she reading to the jury, I guess, is more.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what the question is.
Yes, yes.
Because when you're on Twitter and you're looking at all the people sure. that are so, you know, just dug in on their position.
They're going to say they're, whatever.
Like, I don't give a shit what they think.
Yep, exactly.
Frankly, what I care about is how she's coming off to the jury, mm-hmm. and she's coming off as a very credible witness.
Yeah.
Like she had, that is the problem with having a retrial. Mm-hmm. Everything gets to get corrected. Everything that was brutal for both sides, they're going to go to great lengths to make sure that they're cleared up by the time they go to trial the second time. Jen McCabe was a problem for them. She was very defensive. She was very, you know, there was a real animus that could be sensed between her and Jackson in the first trial mm-hmm. that was not a good look for her. She has cleared that up. She mm-hmm. comes off, she's been able to maintain her composure, you know, and she comes off as very credible. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's going to, and Jackson has not been able to crack her.
Yeah.
And she's now got a day to relax, she's going to come back refreshed and, you know, ready for round two. And I fully expect that she's going to be able to withstand the cross-examination stuff just like she did the first time. So, you know, I think that people that are watching that objectively and are, you know, saying that he's smoking her are just not being objective. They're just dug into their position. Yeah. She's a problem. She's a real problem for the defense at this point. And, you know, I mean, were they able to show that she did lie to the feds? Yeah, mm-hmm. they were able to show that. I mean, she did. She was like, whatever the case may be, whatever the reason.
Yeah.
You know, I think if I were to ask you, the feds were just at your place, you know, a half an hour after you made these phone calls and you're like, oh yeah, I forgot to tell them about three people, I would think you were full of shit.
Sure.
You know, so I mean,
you're more scared.
That right. I mean, that's going to be like a little cloud over her head.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I think that there were some holes that were poked, but for the most part, she's done a very credible job. I think she's coming off to those people in the box that have no idea or theoretically have no idea what this case entails and all the shit that's been going on surrounding it, that she's coming off as a credible witness. And frankly, as far as Hank Brennan's concerned, that's all he gives a shit about.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I feel like she's come off very credible. I think Carrie came off very credible. I know there's like and I don't know that it's helping them where they're picking at some kind of small, like, well, you said it this way here and it's a little bit this way here. And there has been some word with Carrie where she didn't say something in one of the, I forget exactly how it all went, but there was something that was said that, wasn't like she said, but it wasn't quite accurate in one of the testimonies, I think it was. But no one was denying anything. It was just like, yeah, I guess that's how it
came. I'm Hank Brennan, like clearing up like this entire, like these text messages that are going on between everybody that was in that house the following morning is a very simple task. Mm-hmm. I mean, like Tony, if I was at you were throwing a rager at your house or you're having some buddies over, you're like, Bob, come over. He was like, oh yeah, man, I'll be over later tonight. We're at the bar. I'll stop by, mm-hmm. you know, and you had seven or eight people over there and we're all like, oh yeah, Bob and Allison are coming over and I don't fucking show up. And then you go out in your front yard and I'm dead in your front yard the next day. You're going to be like, you're going to hit these people up. Be like, what the fuck? Did you see him?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that is a totally normal thing for people to do, to hit each other up, probably create a text thread with everybody that was there. They're like, did you see anything? Was he dropped off? Did he come in? Did he ring the bell? Like all of those questions that you had. So, I mean, to me,
I don't know if it's playing well to a jury. It feels like, it feels like they're really like they're going at those witnesses the way they are. It feels.
Yeah. It was painful watching Jackson, like trying to wrap that thing up. Just kind of like I was saying in our lives. And again, you know, I do not believe that Karen Reed hit him based on the scientific evidence.
Sure.
I discount all of the other noise.
Yeah, you
I
can mean, believe just that looking without at that. The science. Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, I mean, it's like, is Hank Brennan going to be able to sell me on the concept that John was sideswiped and that he flies 15 feet? I mean, I don't know. Maybe, like, is he going to have a, like, that part of the Commonwealth's case, I don't know, is ever going to get any better.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to make everything that he can get better in terms of the people in the House. That's why I've always been like, you are weakening the defense's case by incorporating something that you're never going to be able to prove
yes.
up, which is that some shit took place inside that house and they pulled him out and left him to die. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, like, there's nothing that exists that we know of that is going to be able to prove that up. So all you're doing is murkying up the waters. And I've said it once, I've said it a million times. My job, if I'm defending Karen Reed, is to get a not guilty, especially in light of the fact that I believe that she's factually innocent, because the science does not support what the Commonwealth is saying happened. You know, like that's where I'm living. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely where I'm living. I'm living 100% with these two ARCA guys, and I'm going from there. And I'm leaning on the fact that Scotty Bello, their own ME, couldn't and wouldn't call it a homicide. You know, I mean, she has it wasn't enough for her. She didn't think that those injuries were simpatico with a motor vehicle strike of a pedestrian. So that's where I'm living in that world right there.
Yeah.
Because when you, I don't know, it's frustrating in a lot of different ways. And it's created this entire universe that has now adopted this concept that something happened in that house. Mm-hmm. And I think if you would have stuck with the Bowden defense, that this was just an ass investigation, and you've got an ass cop, namely Proctor, that was leading it, mm-hmm. who had tunnel vision, man. I mean, there's no other way to look at it other than the dude within the early evening hours of that night had it in his mind that Karen hit him and that's what killed him. Mm-hmm. Like, and there was no change in his mind. And, you know, then you're just stuck with like, oh yeah, you know, I'm just going to throw a couple of the pieces of the taillight here in the yard and it's going to sew my case up. It's like the one thing that we know about Ken PD, There are some corrupt motherfuckers,
yes.
man. I mean, yeah. like Sandra Birchmore is a real thing.
Yes.
That is an actual case that has bled into that department. And, you know, the sad thing about, you know, police agencies and specific police departments is that one bad apple typically does spoil the bunch in terms of trust from the community. And, you know, it's one of those things where I personally, and I think Yannetti and Jackson and Bob Alessi are brilliant attorneys. They're learned. They're incredibly capable guys. They've been doing it forever. You know, they've never had any issues with the bar, never any disciplinary. Like, everybody's like, oh, he's unscrupulous. No, he's just trying to fucking win his case.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, I'm not buying any of that shit. You know, and it's like the people that really don't understand the dynamics of the discovery process, because they've never been a lawyer and never tried a case. These discovery battles are in every single fucking case.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is like pulling teeth for both sides to get information from either side in every case, not just Karen Reed.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, everything that is going on with that, like I predicted that, in terms of ARCA coming in like to the T, you know, I was like, they're coming in, the new testing's coming in, and she's going to give Hank a long leash in terms of his cross-examination, which is exactly what she did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that wasn't some great, you know, sign of my brilliance. That was, I've practiced for a long time.
Yeah.
And that, had she barred them, would have been an automatic retrial, because she would have been stripping them of their defense, her defense, really.
Sure.
So, yeah, man, it's crazy. It's a crazy case.
One more because this is another big one that everyone's talking
about. I'm not trying
about.
To quit you.
Let's go
as long as you want.
The fact that Karen gets out of the car, says she sees John, no one else sees John because the snow is covering him, and knows to go right there to where his body is. How is that explained if she didn't already know it?
I mean, but like, If she already knew, then like none of the other part of the story makes any sense in terms of, like, you can't have it both ways if you're the Commonwealth. Because if they want to, if she knew that he was there, then I don't know why they're not going on the intentionally hit him and left him.
Well, like, because I think intentionally hit him.
I think there's possibilities there. I think it doesn't necessarily mean that that she looked out the window and saw he was laying there and said, "Screw this, I'm going home." What I wonder about is, how did she get to that moment where she's frantically calling the girls and saying, you know, did I hit him? Could I have hit him? And that seems to be the main focus. Like, what struck Karen Reed in her mind after laying there for a little while that, oh shit, this was off. And I'm wondering if it was looking back in that rearview mirror and the side mirror and going, I don't see him. How did he get in the house so quick? But this, like, fuck it, I'm leaving, you know, just in your drunken state, and in not a way of like, he's down, I hit him, just more like, how did he get in the, I didn't see him get in the house.
Yeah, I mean, the problem.
And then you hit that and you go, oh shit, maybe.
Have you ever hit something at 24 miles an hour?
I don't think so. Maybe, I don't know. No.
I'm not going to have you go test it because it'll fuck your car up.
Yeah, yeah.
It's loud.
You would know it. It's
really loud in the cab of your car. It's like shock. It startles you.
But she's like drunk and she's got the music going.
I'm telling you.
Okay, all right.
Now I'm gonna demand that you go out and back your fucking Yukon or whatever giant vehicle you have into something. At 24, 29 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And you know, just clip it.
Yeah.
I don't need to hit it full blow, you know, just a full bore. Just fucking clip it.
I need
it.
A new mailbox.
See what it sounds like, dude. It scares the shit out of you.
Sure.
It's like, you know, it's one of those things. So, you know, I don't know. I mean,
Then it would be that she did have knowledge.
If it happened, the problem for that scenario is that you've got to prove to me through the science that it happened.
Yeah.
Like, how does he end up by a flagpole 16 feet into the yard? Like it's just.
Well, that's why I'm saying he's stumbling. I, you know, you get hit, you get up, you got a few seconds of maybe a little sanity there, and you end up, you know, going over there. And by then, she's already pulled away.
I mean, that it still doesn't explain the taillight all over the yard, dude. It just doesn't.
Unless it was a direct hit to the head and it went flying and it shattered that way. I don't know.
If it's a direct, so now he's been struck in the back of the head somehow. His head,
no, like front, I don't
coffin area, like the coffin.
No, like thing, in like, the isn't the main hit in the like above one of the eyes?
No.
No,
I mean he's got an egg there.
Yeah. But at 24 miles an hour, it'd be a lot more severe,
dude. That would be like if I took a baseball bat to your skull,
sure.
Type injury. Your skull would be like to me.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know, man. It's one of the craziest cases.
I mean, that's where with the taillight stuff, that's where I'm like, maybe that part was planted. I mean, I don't know. I mean, but then it screws up the whole story. Both don't have to exist for one or the other to be true. Like the taillight.
Here's my
let me give you pushback.
Yeah. How do you explain? Because, like, remember, mm-hmm. like we can all look at the weather data from that night.
Sure.
Like, so John wasn't covered. It's not like he was a white mound of snow. The snow had really just kind of started in earnest. There was probably less than an inch. So, like, the rest of his body, whatever he was wearing, would have been visible. He would have had a layer on his top of, like, whatever if he was face down, it would have been his back in the back. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that portion of, like, if you're Karen. And like Carrie and Jen are like, okay, we're pulling up to the property.
Yeah.
And you're fucking sitting out there looking out the back window, like frantically, eyes peeled. Like, I don't know why people think it's so like incredible that she saw him. It's a teeny fucking front yard. This isn't a sprawling estate, man. They're going real slow driving down the street.
Because the other two are saying they didn't.
What?
That they didn't see him there, that she
went
to a mountain.
Jen McCabe was talking about peanut butter jelly sandwiches and just happened to be turned towards the back when they drove there. So that's why Jen didn't say it.
Okay.
Like that's the shit that Jen's talking about that, you know, just kind of like is weird to me. I don't know. It's like that's the part where it seems like I don't know that it means that they did something nefarious or that she's willing to kind of tailor the story because she actually believes that Karen hit him. You know what I'm saying?
Or she just
she's willing to say, you know, I wasn't fucking looking out the window. I was, yeah. I was leaning over this way, talking to Karen, telling her, you know, talking about peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And like, she screams all, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, Kerry Roberts had to have been looking forward.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, she's driving. So I like it, but my pushback on that is how do 12 people that leave that house all miss a big blob in the middle of the yard? And not so much walking out of the house. I don't know if the porch light was on and you'd think that it was on. Again, not a huge front yard. All of them are backing out, heading that way. Their headlights are illuminating the entire yard. I mean, is it the same thing?
If you're not looking
for
it. Is
the excuse on this going to be?
I don't know. I mean, I think if you're not looking for it, you're probably not going to see it. And the last thing you're going to expect is seeing a body that's kind of blending into the yard. It's, I mean, it's already camouflaged with snow by the time people are leaving.
I don't think that they were, I don't think he would have been camouflaged with snow by the time they were leaving. Like that storm, I mean, it was like, it was snowing, but like what I've heard, like, I think that the sticking didn't start happening until like later in the morning, like early morning hours. Like I think when they were all in the party, in terms of what I've seen from the data, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
You know, it'll refresh our recollection when the weatherman comes. You know, and it'll be interesting to see. You know, it's like, was everybody shit faced driving? Probably.
Yeah.
You know. Good,
yeah.
I mean, but I mean,
you drive down a place where it's snowing and you're focusing on the road. I can guarantee I'm going to miss most shit on this side of the road, and I'm not expecting to see a body either. So if there's anything out there, like, and I don't know the house, like rocks. Some, I don't know, tarps, whatever the fuck some people have in their yard. You know, yeah. I mean, your mind's not going to body, you know, especially if it's dark and you can't see and there's no light shining on it. Nothing's going through your mind thinking that John could be dead in the yard at that moment.
Ryan Nagel was in shit face in this.
But
it's hard to miss
something in a yard
before he left.
Yeah, I just don't think it's hard to miss something like that.
But I think he would have been like blind not to see it. He's sitting in the driveway waiting for his sister.
But that's the flagpole's over here. The driveway's way over here.
Oh, okay. There is no way over. This isn't the Brewski estate. This is a fucking, this is a,
like, I've a, seen like it. A, yeah, it's not that crazy far, but it's far enough small. Where like, you're not looking there.
It's a very small yard and you're sitting in your fucking car waiting for your sister to come out. You don't think that you'd look over to your left, bro?
No, and because I think most people are doing this, actually. I think most people are focused there.
That's true.
And
that's possible.
I mean, I get startled all the time. Like if I'm dropping somebody off or my daughter off at something and then I'm waiting for her to come out, I get started all the time where she'll just be standing by the door for a minute, just kind of screw with me.
Sidler.
And I'm like, and she's just laughing, but I don't she notice it for up. Like minutes. Yeah. So yeah, if you're sitting there, there's plenty of distractions for you.
Yeah. So yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know, man. We'll see how it plays out. It's going to be fascinating to see how Hank continues to employ these witnesses and what the defense is going to do, man. Again, you know, I know these guys are all exceptional defense attorneys because they've tried tons of cases. But man, I just have a difference of opinion in terms of how I try that case. Man.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if they're going to pivot her at all because it feels like they're kind of.
He sold it. He sold it during the opening. I was telling Allison like during our live yesterday. I'm like, if I'm Jackson, I'm backing the fuck out of that whole conspiracy thing and just going with the science because. Hank's putting on a case that is going to sell the jury.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if I were on the jury right now, where we're at in this trial, I'm convicting her.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got this situation right now. And that's obviously, we got the whole defense.
Yeah. There's a lot more to come.
Defense case at you. But where like his case, I couldn't have said that at the same time last year during Lally's case in chief. That's the bigger takeaway. Hank Brennan's trying the case. This is the reason they paid him a lot of money to come in. The guy is a born defense attorney. The dude knows how to try a case. He knows how to put a case together because he's usually on the other side of it, which is way more difficult to do. most of the time in terms of trying to craft a defense.
Yeah.
You know, you got to, sometimes you got to get real creative. So, and he's employing all the tools that he has gathered over the course of his career, and he's employing them, you know, for the state this time, for the Commonwealth. And, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, there's going to be a hell of a lot more pressure on the defense to get them to not guilty beyond because they just didn't meet their burden. You know what I'm saying? Because he's going to have it to the point, I believe, to where Karen can get convicted because he's going to put a good case on. Yeah. Like, if people are thinking that that's not the case, they're fooling themselves. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but if you think Karen's innocent, but the fellas and the gal on the defense table are better be ready for the task because they're going to need to put on a hell of a defense.
Yeah, I agree. To be continued.
To be continued.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. The neighborhood was picture perfect. Manicured lawns, kids riding bikes, friendly smiles exchanged over white picket fences. And then there was him, the guy who never made eye contact, the one who only left his house at night, dragging black trash bags to the curb. Bags that sometimes twitched. He's just a little odd, they said. Just keeps to himself until the smell started. Until the missing pets turned into missing people. Until someone finally had the nerve to peek inside that basement window. And if they had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, they could have listened to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi ad-free. And before everyone else, they could have recognized the warning signs. They could have gotten out. But they didn't. And now, they're part of the next episode. Don't make the same mistake. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.